Greetings, fellow investigators, and welcome to our video podcast, Into the Darkness, where my friends and I play the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. I'm your host, Tom Rayleigh. For the modern explorer, the world is large, and he expects new things around every corner. His hope is to find new perspectives, to meet new people, and to learn about himself in the process. But there was a time when our world was smaller. It only amounted to how far you could travel in a day. Our world was a village, and beyond it was the realm of monsters and demons. It's within the darker side of human nature that we react with absolute terror to things that are unfamiliar to us. Our scenario is entitled Bird's Head, and it was written by our very own resident anthropologist, Dr. Mick Swan. Mick is also going to GM for us, and I hope I didn't embarrass him. So, sit back, relax, the players are ready. Let's begin our journey into the darkness. Mick?
Right. By way of a prologue, some time ago, in May of 1924, George Jeffreys, the bursar of Miskatonic University, announced that there was to be an expedition to the Dutch East Indies. And this expedition was going to be financed by a gentleman named Herman Royce, an industrialist who, while he never actually attended Miskatonic, had nonetheless decided that he wanted on to take upon himself the trappings of an academic. And I think there's an assumption somewhere in there that in running this, he's going to get himself an honorary doctorate or something. Competition was fierce, and a great many departments were involved. But at the end of the selection process, the six of you were selected to represent the university on this groundbreaking new mission. You were to be sent to the Bird's Head Peninsula in the Dutch East Indies, a far-flung area only recently discovered in 1920 and known by the locals as the Vogelkopf. So with that in mind, if you'd like to introduce your characters, we'll get started.
Okay, well, my character is named Pejo Neal. That's Peter Joseph, but everybody calls me Pejo. I'm a graduate at University of Houston, and I normally live in Odessa, but I've been spending some time up here in New England, and I jumped at the chance. I am a cartographer by trade. And I am very excited to map part of the world where nobody's ever been before. That's about it for me.
All right. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. My character is John White. I'm originally from Melbourne, Australia. I am the biology professor at Arkham University. They told me a few weeks ago that they're going to the Bird's Head, and I jumped at every opportunity to go and check out just to explore.
All right. Well, my character's name is Sharon Chase. She is an archaeologist. She is a recent graduate from Miskatonic University's archaeology program, Arkham born and raised native. She immediately jumped at the chance to go on this expedition because she is just so eager to learn about, possibly new cultures, undiscovered historical artifacts, maybe some ruins to investigate. Maybe there's got to be something more out there.
There must be. Jack?
Good evening. I'm Jack Adu. I sound French, but I'm not. I was born and raised in Arkham. I'm an ornithologist, kind of a average build, average looks, wear glasses. I've got big ears, though, which helps me locate bird calls. I tend to be on the quiet side, walking around with my pair of binoculars, stumble around a lot because I'm usually looking up.
Hey, Damien.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Damien.
every time.
Then you cut out again.
Sean!
Did I?
Yeah. Instantly.
All right. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Yes. It's the keeper magic, you see.
Excellent. My name is Damian Donovan. I am a biologist / herpetologist. I'm originally from Belfast, Ireland, but my brother and I emigrated to Boston and Arkham areas, respectively, when we were teenagers. I've gone to school for many years, and my passion is exploring. I like to find lots of new things out in the world, and I think there's lots more we haven't found. I'm a big guy. I'm imposing. I like to drink, and I like to explore, but I like to crack a joke. That's me.
And finally, Arthur.
Hi, guys. My name is Arthur Morton. I'm originally from New Mexico. I grew up with the Navajo and their surrounding territories, or I guess reservations, in 1920. So I was fascinated with their culture and with their society. And from there, I kind of became an anthropologist. I originally wanted to be an archaeologist, but that didn't really pan out. I'm a graduate of the University of Illinois at Chicago, and from there, I began studying East Asian societies and culture. And with the discovery of Bird's Head, and with New Guinea kind of being this kind of rich prospect for new anthropological discoveries, I jumped at the chance of it, because there's this wealth of knowledge that we can learn from the tribes people that are there. There's so much that we can learn about the Darwinistic societal evolution of their people. And I'm just itching to go there.
Splendid. Man off, man off. Right. So the plan is very simple. You are to set sail, originally from Arkham. No, not from Arkham, sorry. You are to travel to New York, where you will be meeting the SS Marquesita, which is going to take you to Darwin, Australia. This is a 5-week voyage. You are advised to bring some form of entertainment. It's not a cruise ship. It's primarily a cargo ship. You're paying customers. You have individual cabins, but there's not much in the way of luxury. They'll feed you, and they'll give you fresh bedding, and that's largely it. Everything else is up to you. We can assume that the supplies for your expedition, standard supplies, like your working supplies, are going to be with you. As regards to perishables and food and possibly some trade goods, that sort of thing you'll be picking up in Darwin. Because there's absolutely no point sending you on a 5-week voyage with anything that's possibly disposable. At Darwin, you will meet up with the SS Betty Jean, which is a local Australian tramp steamer, which is going to take you round the coast, the long way round, because apparently that's safer. So you'll be going around the English, I'll actually show you on the map, but I've got a map I can show you, I believe, which is one of the few maps we have.
Did you make this map, TJ?
No, I'm afraid I didn't draw this map.
It's a very rough map. So if you can see my cursor here, Darwin is down here. I think it might even be there.
I see why it's called Bird's Head.
Yep. You're going to be traveling through the Torres Strait, round through this island group here, also known as the Bird's Tail Peninsula, into the German territory, and initially docking here at the Dutch settlement of Hollandia. In Humboldt Bay. From there, where you hopefully you'll be picking up your guide, You'll then head through the Misery Islands to to Mano Wakri, which is about here. And then on local boats up the coast to the place I haven't written down, which I think is called Salcorum, I believe.
Well, now something Salcorum tells me that that your cartographer there took a few liberties with that map because
this is a very old map from the
Misery Islands. That seems like a unpleasant place to be.
You'll be able to get a more recent coastal map when you get to Australia.
Well, it's a start.
This is just something that the
my job is going to be to map out the interior, and I think that we can probably get rid of those little claws down there on the bottom of the map.
Yeah.
Yes. There's a lot of affectations.
Probably a good idea.
Now, there's been one expedition into the region previously, which was the Landau expedition in 1922. Very little is known about the findings from that expedition. They mapped a valley.
Okay.
And that was it. Now that's basically where you'll be starting your expedition. Will be from the Khabar Valley region, which is where they went in.
Just so I know about the last expedition, how successful was that expedition?
Well, they found a couple of interesting species of orchid, and they discovered an animal that they called the Western Tree Kangaroo. It's taxonomically distinct from the tree kangaroos in the German East Indies. They discovered quite a few birds, and they made contact with some tribes of the region, mainly the Dore, Hattam, and the Wepu on the coast, but also the Mayar tribe down in the valley. But there are lots of undiscovered tribes in the region, and they're not necessarily all friendly.
What do we know about the Maya in the valley? Do we know anything?
Well, we know that the valley people are predominantly agricultural cultures. They have large communal gardens that they tend. They are, in comparison to, for example, like the Eastern Highlanders of the German and English regions, they're not a particularly warlike peoples. There's a lot of movement between the groups, particularly on the coast, the coastal settlements. But nonetheless, it's difficult for them to interact with each other to a greater degree because their languages are very different. There's no commonality of language between them. So you find that particularly the tribes on one side of the valley will have a very different language and culture to the tribes on the other side of the valley. So that in itself keeps them apart. Mainly they just keep to their own territories. They have the occasional squabbles, but that's been minimized in recent years by the Dutch presence.
Mm-hmm. So are we on the boat now, or are we heading, or
are we doing research right now?
I see no reason not to. I mean, if any of you want to pick up any specialist supplies that you haven't already specified on your character sheets, would be the time.
I mean, I would assume that I would have everything I would need for excavation of materials, for cataloging discoveries, and for basically, you know, getting around in the jungles.
Oh yes, yeah. I mean, you've been given relevant clothing and equipment, footwear, hammocks, tents. All of this has been supplied by the expedition, by Mr. Royce.
So what we need is playing cards. We need some board games so that we don't get bored.
But, you know, I'm just content with bringing a book to read. Nice long book.
I'm quite honestly, I'm looking completely forward to getting outside of the U.S. territory so that we can start drinking again.
Oh, yes. Yes.
That is a good point.
That's a common theme in a lot of these.
Yes, it is. Isn't it?
We will be stopping
right briefly spots. In Panama to go through the Panama Canal. So,
that would
give you an opportunity maybe
get
to buy
tequila down there.
Yep, possibly. Certainly, quite a lot of cheap white rum. Hmm. That's for sure.
It's a good start.
Panamanian white rum, aplenty.
I think that's a good idea.
Okay. Well, you leave on July 5th. Day after Independence Day.
On the Marquesita?
On the Marquesita, because the crew wanted to watch the fireworks.
Well, who wouldn't want to watch the fireworks?
The July the 4th fireworks. Do you not have fireworks on July? I thought you had fireworks on the 4th of July.
No, we do have fireworks on July 4th.
Oh, okay.
I said, who wouldn't want to watch the fireworks?
Oh, right. Sorry.
Quite honestly, they usually start a few days early and they keep going for a few days after that.
Usually.
the trip is so uneventful as to be mind-numbingly tedious.
Well.
There's just nothing happens.
Good thing I brought this book.
I'm alternating between books and, you know, maybe doing a little bit of research and then, you know, keep on alternating.
Well, unfortunately, I'm not quite that interesting, so I find that this is the most god-awful boring trip that I've ever been on my whole life.
If you didn't bring any books of your own, the only books that you can find anywhere on the ship are the Admiralty Manual of Seamanship 1922.
Excellent.
And, A rather lurid pot boiler called Lady Don't Fall Backwards by Darcy Sarto.
That book again. We hear that book a lot.
Very popular, apparently.
Hey, first I've heard of it. I'm not the one reading that. I have my own novel.
I have been upstairs. I have been up at the bridge. I have looked through every map in this place. I have memorized everything that I can. And that was the first couple of days.
It's an English whodunit. Or a who did it?
Five weeks?
Yeah.
My God.
5 weeks. Five long, long weeks. It'll be about 4 days until you hit Panama.
I'm getting late.
Wow. That's true.
Stock up on booze.
Now, when we get to Panama, do we get out of the boat? Or do we stay in the boat?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, you'll get like a day, maybe a day and a night of shore leave, because the crew's gonna get shore leave at Panama for a night. So.
Well, there you go.
Buy a book there.
I'm hitting the bar.
I completely
forgot as well. If are any of you in your luggage? Are any of you carrying firearms?
Oh yes.
I would assume that I would have something. I don't know how to shoot a firearm myself, but
I actually bought my first machete because I thought, I bet you I'm going to need that in the jungle.
I think you probably will. If any of you are carrying firearms, you will at certain ports, not necessarily Panama, but later on at certain ports, you will be required to register your firearms.
Oh, really? Okay.
You know, in this day and age, obviously the people are very relaxed about gun ownership, and it's, you know, in this day and age, but they would prefer to know if you're bringing a firearm into their country. This is particularly notable in the Dutch East Indies. They want to know how many firearms there are in their country. Be prepared. I mean, you've been given a talk, obviously, by...
Right.
The man whose name I've missed, George Jeffries, the bursar, has already given
George Jefferson.
George Jeffries.
Well,
Oh, okay.
He's already given you quite a lengthy lecture about the political situation there, and you must bear in mind that when dealing with uncontacted tribes, really it's a question of diplomacy and tact, and if necessary, tactical withdrawal, because if an incident is sparked, it could get out of all control. You may be leaving after a few months, but the ramifications of your actions could carry on for years with the Dutch authorities there. So you must be very, very cautious. The understanding is that if you're taking firearms with you, they're for your personal defense against wild animals and such.
What about, brings the question, are we having any sort of, you mentioned a guide, do we need to worry about security? Like, is there going to be people there helping us or guarding us?
Yes, you're going to be you'll be taking on bearers at Saukarem, which is a coastal village. It's the nearest village to the Wepu River, which takes you into the Wampi River.
So would it be
how many people are we bringing on?
Well, you're going to be picking up a number of native bearers, which will depend on how much equipment you end up with by the time you get there.
Okay.
But it's estimated between 12 to 15 native bearers and at least one guide, and your guide will also be your translator. You'll be picking up, you're actually not entirely sure. There's a bit of confusion about that. You'll either be picking him up in Hollandia or in Manawakri, one or the other. That hasn't actually been clarified yet.
Is there a specific, is there something specific we're supposed to look for in terms of who the guide is, or just?
All you know is that it's a guy called Wepu, who is a local, who apparently has been selected purely because he speaks a couple of the local dialects, but also knows English. I mean, he probably knows Dutch as well.
Well, yeah.
It's okay. So it's quite rare to find locals there who will know English, because most of them are principally Dutch speakers, if they do know any language. Or they'll speak Pidgin as well, Tokpisin, Pidgin English.
Mm-hmm. Which, no Spanish speakers. I'm pretty fluent in Spanish.
Nope, no Spanish speakers down there.
Yeah.
What about
smattering of German speakers? No French either.
A shame, because I also know Spanish.
Well,
I know German.
Well, we have, that's one thing we have, someone who knows German.
Well, you might, you're passing through German territory. That's a long way from where you're going, but
might be useful.
It's German territory down there.
I know Chinese.
Well, there are the Chinese are the most diverse populace on the face of the earth. So there's every chance you might meet some Chinese people in Darwin, at the very least. So be sure to say ni hao.
Well, Mr. Donovan, I'm sure you're going to be quite busy with your anthropology stuff.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping we find some ruins or something down here.
You know, I have no idea if there's even any mountains or anything down there.
Well, it's completely uncharacterized. I would assume there may be.
You do know that one of the few things that we do know about the interior of the Bird's Head Peninsula is that there are two large mountain ranges.
Oh. Well, see, the higher up I can get, the more accurate my surveying can be.
Yeah.
So.
The Dutch call the largest range the Cyclops Mountains. Locals, I think, call them the Arfak Mountains. And there's another set of mountains called the Tamraal Mountains. But obviously the actual topography of those mountains remains a mystery. They've been seen, obviously, from the valley. But no one has yet been up into the mountains on either side of the valley to explore them.
It's a mountain. How can you miss a whole mountain?
We can assume then that all this information that we've got, we did research before we left.
Yeah, I would assume so. I mean, you've been supplied with, in regards to your disciplines, you've been supplied with all the available information.
So what is the mission? What exactly is the mission? I know what my mission is to map the peninsula.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, what precisely are we doing?
Exactly what we're supposed to do here.
Well, within your own disciplines, you're effectively, those of you who are biologists will be categorizing, discovering, categorizing, and possibly taking samples of new species.
Mostly bugs, I bet you.
There's probably a great many of those. Are you Mr. Morton or Dr. Morton?
Dr. Morton.
Dr. Morton, okay. Dr. Morton, I think, would be tasked with both studying the already contacted groups in the area. And I think there's an understanding that they would like you to attempt to make contact with any peoples you discover in the areas that Mr. Neal is mapping.
Sure. Really quick question, just because I'm interested. I don't know if I need to do a roll for this or not, but are there any, I think the term is acephalous tribes in the region that we're going to? I think I'm saying that right.
Did you say acephalous?
Acephalous, yeah.
Self-governing?
Cephalopod tribes?
No? Fish tribes? Fishmen?
Acephalous means that they're self-governing.
Yeah, they're highly agrarian, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, biologist.
Yeah, to a lesser or greater extent, yes, the majority of them. There are large tribal groups in the region, but very much everything's done on a village by village level. So each village will have a headman.
Okay.
So really, every village is self-governing, and in terms of their bioculture, they are all principally agrarian. I mean, that they have, like, there's a certain amount of hunting and gathering going on, but the peoples in the valley, as far as is known, are primarily farmers. They have large settled communities and gardens. They're not like the nomadic peoples of the Amazon, for example. They're not moving around a few fixed points. They tend to be living in a centralized village, or a well-established centralized village.
Okay.
Well, I heard that that you can cut yourself a path through that jungle with your machete, and the next day it's all grown back. Is that true?
Well, it's very slow going. That's what they say. They say it's
That's probably why they're all still isolated, because...
Yeah.
I'm no very biologist, very, but I think that sounds like a lot of hooey. I don't think that there's any plant that could grow that fast.
If this were the future, I'd talk about kudzu, but it's not the future yet, so I guess I can't talk about kudzu.
That's a known plant.
Kudzu, so they say if you leave your window open at night, it'll come in and get you. It'll just grow right into your house.
Grinds on. After what seems like an eternity, you get to Panama. And
Jeez.
Enjoy, you know, a relaxing, if rather sweaty, break in Panama for the day.
I'm gonna try to get laid. Can I get laid? Do I have to do a roll for that?
You do a luck roll.
Charm?
Combination.
I think in Panama it's a mixture of luck.
That's not
and credit
what we
rating.
Mean by get lucky.
64. What was that? Was luck? What is my luck? Yeah, that made it.
Well, there you are. You you're in a bar, and you meet a young lady or a young man, depending on your personal choice, who takes a shine to your wallet.
How about a young lady and a young man?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's
Panama. Double three way.
And what happens in Panama stays in Panama.
It's true, because there's no consequences.
No, you'd have to get me pretty drunk before I even considered.
I was just expecting that you'd all buy nice hats.
Sharon, we are going to be artists.
I buy a nice hat.
Sharon, I got my eyes on you, Sharon, because we're going to be on this boat for 5 weeks.
Yeah. Lay off it, would you? You know, I might be tiny, but I can pack a punch.
That's what I'm hoping.
Don't get too fresh with me.
I beg your pardon.
Always one of those characters.
Vic, is there a market nearby? Like a proper old-timey local person's market as opposed to a touristy market?
Yes, with a bit of effort you could find one. Yes.
Don't eat any vegetables.
No, I'd like to do my job, wander and just see if there's any in the section of meats and such, if there's any interesting reptiles or mammals that I haven't seen before, so I can take a good look and make some notes.
Not overwhelmingly, there's a man selling animals in cages, and there's a rather tired, dirty-looking iguana sitting in one of them. Doesn't look very happy with itself. Looks like it might possibly be drugged.
How would you do with an iguana?
People eat them.
Well, yes, I know.
Other than that, it's just
people really eat iguanas, you guys? I think you're pulling my leg.
Oh, yeah. They do.
Listen, I being from Texas, people I've been to Mexico a number of times, and you get down into Mexico, and under the shade of every single tree you find, there's a couple of iguanas sitting there staring at you.
Well,
so it's an abundant food
seller on the corner selling iguana tacos.
Well, anyone will eat anything, so it doesn't surprise what, you know, iguana, whatever, if it's meat or if it's plant, people will attempt to try and eat it.
Anything with four legs is at the table.
Now I'm kind of curious as to what iguana tacos taste like.
Tastes like chicken.
I've had alligator in it.
It actually does. Well, yeah, chicken would be the best example.
Rattlesnake. Mm. Mm.
Yeah, that's really good.
I've never had any of those, Pijo.
Well, you're in for a treat, man.
Life.
Oh, yeah, you're going to be in a big
treat, Karen. I just imagine when we get to the Dutch West Indies? What is it?
The Dutch East Indies.
The Dutch East Indies, that you're going to be trying tarantula.
Ew.
Yeah, that would. I would even like that.
Look, I don't know about you, but I think iguana's enough of a stretch.
They have chicken too. I think they call it
polo. At least there's that.
Chicken.
They call it polo. Or pollo.
I believe it's pollo. It's the way you pronounce that.
Was pollo Spanish?
I was just fooling with you. I do speak Spanish. We both do.
The majority of easy objects that you want to get a hold of, you know, things like some
cigars.
Yes.
Yeah,
I
think, you know, some good rum and a couple of cigars would make me happy.
Yeah, they probably have some Panama. They probably have some nice clothes, nice white linen.
There is an outfitters that you find that's strangely seems to be owned by a gentleman who looks oddly like Alec Guinness. Whoever that might be in 1924.
He doesn't call himself that. He calls himself Obi-Wan.
Also, I was thinking if I can, I want to try and get, if I can, some kind of container or box about a fair size, just in case, you know, I can store some stuff that I want to keep secret or something like that, like storage.
Like a steamer trunk or something?
Like a steamer trunk.
Yeah, I have no doubt at all that you can find somewhere that would sell you a steamer trunk, a luggage. I would probably buy the docks, actually. That'd be a
You know, with all the with all these guys getting fresh with me, I think I might want to get some personal protection. I'm gonna pick up a pretty decent sized knife.
Okay, or a tiger, possibly.
There's an iguana.
You can't beat a tiger for protection.
I don't think I could have a tiger in my. I don't think I could bring a tiger on the ship.
You could probably bring anything on a ship.
Guys, stop pulling my leg. It's not funny. I know I'm new to this. Just give me.
Why you always gotta
mess with me?
It being Panama, quite near the docks, you find this fishing supplies shop that has quite an impressive selection of knives. There's even a couple of switchblades in there.
Yeah, nothing beats a fish gut knife though. That's long, thin blade. You can slip it in right underneath somebody's rib and hardly make a wound.
But I mean, wouldn't the blade be a little fragile?
Not if it's steel.
Good point.
Makes a mental note that Pijo might be a little
uneasy.
Look, I'm a country boy.
Yeah, I'm just going to put
the, you know, I,
the secret GM mark for potential.
Well, he is from Houston, so.
No.
Yeah, you know, I went to Houston University. Standard, I am
from Odessa.
Same thing.
Yeah, I pick up a pretty standard hunting knife as a weapon slash tool.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's every reason you're going into the jungle. There's every reason to have a knife or a.
You know what? That would be. I think that's a good idea. Is I'm gonna grab a machete, just so that we're going into the jungle, the wilderness. Might as well grab something bigger to cut down the trees.
A machete, senor. Si, machete. Big box of machetes.
Excellent, Mr. White.
Just a tool. It's a standard tool in Panama. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got one in the house.
We can spend our days above deck having machete fights. See who comes out of it with all.
Yeah, I should probably get a machete myself.
Mick, is it possible while they're all doing that for me to just, because I brought several books on what's been published, articles published on what's been seen in New Guinea, is there a possibility of me, as you're freaking out, because there's a rabid dog in Panama, it seems.
Streets are full of
mosquitoes. You should probably get some mosquito nets.
They're all over the place. Yes,
mosquitoes. Dogs in Panama?
There's dogs everywhere. Everywhere there are people, there are dogs.
Yep.
I could tell you about the long history that humans have had with dogs, but I'm sure you probably already know.
There's probably a couple of cats on the Marquesita.
Oh, undoubtedly.
I'm assuming, but they're probably all in cages waiting to be sold, though.
No, they're probably running around eating rats that they find on board the ship.
Okay, true.
Why not?
Papua New Guinea, not China.
That's true. Speaking of the ship, I'd like to stay on board and read articles about Papua New Guinea, primarily about the cargo cults, possibly the Taro cult.
Right. Well, I can help you there because
do I need to do a roll for that? Because I'm reading it.
Well, the cargo cults don't exist yet.
They don't. I thought that were the Taro cult was in like 1922 or something. Like that.
Okay.
What was that noise?
Damn freaking dog!
Freaking street dogs.
The Taro cult is not in that part. I mean, you can read up on that, but it's not in that part of the.
It's not in that part. Okay.
And then the cargo cults and like the John Frum Society and things like that didn't really spring up until after the Second World War.
Okay.
And they were more of a
just making sure.
Of seeing the Allied troops bringing in supplies.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about how contact has really kind of been with the tribes in the Papua New Guinea, because I want to see if it's mainly been aggressive or if they've been relatively passive.
In all three regions, there's been very much sort of the kind of aggressive subjugation of the locals that you would expect in any colonial country of the period. In the English area, it's been more pronounced. That's not to say the Germans and the Dutch haven't indulged in a whole-scale subjugation of the population, but more because of elements of geography. There's been a limit on how far they could push into the interior to actually subjugate people. There's a lot of people whose lands have been taken, who now exist in coastal settlements that have been created by the occupying powers, and those peoples have possibly become uncomfortably dependent on the colonial authorities, because now they've had their lands taken away from them, they have nowhere to hunt, they have nowhere to farm.
Okay.
So they've essentially been forced into service.
So the colonial settlement has been rather aggressive, which is to be expected.
This is very much, I mean, it's very much not a fully formed colony. The colonial areas, as you'll see when you arrive in Hollandia, are still very basic.
What about the general first contact with tribe? Are the tribes passive or are they aggressive?
This is a difficult issue. It depends largely on the individual tribes.
Okay.
Because some of them are quite relaxed and curious about meeting new people, and have heard from other tribes further, you know, up the stream or up country, have heard about the presence of these Westerners who've arrived on the coast, and are quite curious. Others, in particularly many of the entirely uncontacted tribes in the more remote areas, which is most of New Guinea, are unlikely to respond positively to Europeans, given that in their culture the only things that have white skin are ghosts and the living dead. They would sort of, not necessarily that they would be outright aggressive, but there's every chance that in contacting some of these tribes that believe that particular belief system, that they would simply find you terrifying.
Okay. In the documents that I have, is there any mention of what, because I know that with a lot of first contact in the East Indies and stuff like that, and even I think in Africa, they would, and especially with the Native Americans, beads, colorful beads were sort of a bartering tool with the colonial powers. Is that the case in Papua New Guinea?
The primary trade good that's being used at the moment is rice, cheap machetes, cheap knives. These are the kind of trade goods that you'd be picking up in Darwin.
All right.
It's certainly like things like the food and metal tools would definitely be used to pay off your bearers.
I will make note that they're interested in, I guess, cereals, rice, no wheat or anything like that. So, but I'll make note of that. So that way, when we're in Darwin, I'll pick some up in case we do make contact.
Sort of twists of tobacco.
Okay.
But I was actually going to ask that question earlier. Do they like trinkets? Pretty, if they use them for their costumes, or
yeah, I mean they're interested in things like beads and trinkets, but whether they'd sort of actively trade for things, I mean as a gift, they might like to receive it as a gift, but whether they'd actively trade with you and regard it as something useful enough to trade with you for trade goods, another matter entirely.
I'll definitely bring some of that just as trade stuff. I mean, not trade stuff, but gift stuff.
Mm. Yeah, same. How about like textiles or anything?
They do produce some textiles, like bark cloth.
Mm-hmm. I imagine everything rots out there, though.
Yes, things like
that. It'd be very, very difficult, wouldn't it?
I have a question for Mr. Adu. What the hell is that bird over there?
We're still in Panama?
Well, it kind of looks like a pelican, but it's different than the pelicans I've seen.
Might be a cormorant.
I think we're going to see a lot of birds in the next 5 weeks just flying along. Like, there's a bird and there's a bird.
You know, I'm inclined to believe that.
And as you say, if you keep saying to me like, oh, that's a seagull, and that's a seagull, and that's a seagull, and that's a seagull.
It could be a southern cassowary.
There you go. That's very interesting. Not really, but I imagine by the time that we get to, well, we'll have them all named. That's George, that's Mike, that's Don.
We'll definitely have to name one.
Oh, yes, Don the cassowary, of course. It's a pretty bird, though.
Cassowary Don. That sounds really, sounds like a bar.
Yeah,
cassowary it's a cassowary Don.
But you know what?
I would visit that bar.
After I drop my locker into my room, I'm going to go down to the local tavern, and I'm just going to just have a couple of drinks, as many drinks as I possibly can. Because I've been, you know, stuck on this boat for a couple of days, and I want to make sure I am well lubricated before I go into the on the big journey.
I'm probably in there waiting.
Yeah, no, I'm probably also going to grab a celebratory drink, you know, just at the start of our journey here.
And a cigar.
So yeah.
Thank you. I don't smoke.
I'm having a celebratory bottle.
I'll go. Well, I would love to join you on that bottle.
Be feel welcome. Let's go.
Cheers.
Cheers.
It's all going a bit drinky.
Not even Friday night.
I wonder
well,
if
did we arrive here on a Friday?
I haven't got a 1924 calendar in front of me, so I'm not entirely sure, unless anyone is an autistic savant who can do the thing with dates that some savants can do.
Actually, there's a website. You just type in the year and see what the day was, and instant info.
Well, as, to the best of my knowledge, July the 9th, 1924... was, I believe, a Wednesday.
You are correct, sir.
So it's
Friday somewhere.
It's Wednesday night in Panama, and
you know, in some places they call this Hump Day.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really know how to smoke.
I'm sure.
Well. I show you how, and I
left the label on.
These are some, and I take a big puff, and these are awesome cigars.
Try one of these.
You know, I'm a.
Is that a blueberry flavored cigar?
I'm staying away from the cigar smoke. I don't smoke myself.
Well. It's the start of expedition. Might as well celebrate it.
Okay. Well, mm-hmm. you're in a tavern called Pink Oboe.
Oh, the Pink Oboe again.
They're all called the Pink Oboe. All
oh,
taverns.
Oh, Pink Oboe, not the Pink Elbow.
Oboe, as in
popular chain
musical.
Yes.
I wasn't sure if he said oboe, hobo, or elbow.
Oboe.
It's the same bar that we had last night in our game.
Really?
So,
we had
you're
that, we,
in
we,
a bar called the Pink Oboe. Getting.
We had the it purple must, turtle and the.
Well, it must be some kind of brand, global brand.
Yeah. The crimson.
Hang on, Dr. Morton is still on the ship. Jack, are you in the tavern as well?
Yeah, I think so. I'd probably hang out with the rest of the group.
Okay.
So not a big drinker, though.
Sure where everyone is.
I'm going to try a Shirley Temple, I think.
You'd be lucky to get anything other than shots or a beer in this place, to be honest.
I don't think they have ginger.
It's a bit of a sort of sailor's dive. You know, the furniture is tea chests. You're sitting on tea chests. There's sawdust on the floor. The tables are slightly bigger tea chests.
Now, Miss Chase, if anybody starts
charming very, little dive bar.
There's a very big, dented-looking pickaxe handle sitting on the bar as well.
When it we're in the like bar,
a rough dive. This one.
Are they? I guess they don't.
I'm
really,
aggressively what kind of, telling off guys left and right.
What kind of food do they serve here?
Stew.
Is it good stew?
Stew.
Yeah, if you like iguana.
There's meat in it.
It's a meat stew.
Well, I mean,
meat stew.
You know what? You taste it.
I am a little hungry and no time like the present.
You know, I once learned something. If the locals are eating it, it's probably okay.
Most of the locals are just drinking very heavily and shouting at each other. One or two are hitting each other.
Is there any dancing going on?
No, there's no dancing. There's a man in the corner who looks like he might possibly be dead. But it's.
I think he's just
bit,
drunk.
It's a bit dingy. It's difficult to tell.
This is typical.
Well,
where did you take us, Damien?
I'm not really that keen on stew, but if someone else from the group.
Well, look, it's totally safe because they boiled it. So
if it's safe, I'll try it. I'm on the ship if I don't like this.
It's the vegetables you got to be careful of because they washed them in the water and the water might be bacteria filled.
Yeah, so I've heard.
I'll eat some of this stew.
Yeah, I guess I'll try it.
Fine.
You, no
Spanish,
right?
You convinced me.
You speak
me.
Spanish, so I'm, you know, it's
badgered into it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. They do speak Spanish here.
So that's mm-hmm. fine.
El Stuo, please.
Stew.
El Stuo. Porfavor.
El Stuo, por favor.
Stew para cuatro.
You know,
system. He gives a sigh, and throws a dirty old towel over his shoulder, and plods out to the kitchen. Comes back about 5 minutes later, with it's a stretch to call it a tray.
Okay.
It's a large piece of plywood.
Slab of wood.
With four bowls of stew. And four spoons.
Does it smell good? Does it smell like stew? It
smells like stew, yeah.
Tuck in.
It smells a little bit spicy.
Maybe a little spicy.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of prodding the meat in the stew, trying to figure out what kind of meat it is and deciding I probably don't want to know.
It's definitely meat.
It's mystery meat.
It's meat of some kind.
You know, bottoms up, I guess, and I take a bite.
It's
surprisingly good, actually.
You see, it's delicious.
Well, I guess I was a little concerned. Maybe it was like some like weird animal or something. But
well, like, I didn't mean to say
it. Tastes like chicken.
I didn't mean to say anything, Sharon. But I don't see that dog around here anymore.
Really, Pijo? Are we going to start with that?
I apologize.
Boy, I told you to get fresh with me.
You're eating
the stew over your head.
You're eating the stew, and none of the locals are laughing at you.
Ah, then we're okay.
So it seems so generally okay. So yeah, it's not, you know, it's not. I mean, it's a bit of a dodgy bar, but it's, you know, it's not. You're not getting any hassle. There's lots of foreigners from various places. Crews of different ships are in there. It's not like it's full of like insular locals. They're used to people coming and going.
Well, I mean,
I'm going to have to see all of you for the next 5 weeks. So I'm going to go chat up some of these other people and see what they're up in. What's up?
All right.
Yeah, you know what? I'll come with you, PJ. Let's just join. Let's see if we can, you know.
I'm going to listen in.
So I'm just going to be friendly. Just being friendly to other people in the bar, except for the creepy guy in the corner who looks like he's dead.
They range between being drunkenly over friendly and being kind of bewildered that you've tried to talk to them. A party of Chinese sailors just look at you blankly, completely failing to comprehend a word that you're saying.
I am a little concerned about that guy that looks like he's dead in the corner. Nobody's really paying any attention to him, and I don't know if he's drunk or if he's expired or what. Can I, like, you know, check on him, make sure he's okay?
If you like, yeah.
That cat seems interested in him.
Yeah, you know, I go over there, and I'm like, you know, I assume I would speak Spanish, so in Spanish I'm like, sir, you okay?
There's no response. You could try making a medical roll.
I could. Which I actually do not make. If it were first aid, I would make it.
He's definitely a man in the corner. That much you can be sure of. Mm-hmm. And Homo sapiens.
Mm-hmm.
He's warm. That's about as much as you can tell.
Okay, so he's probably passed out.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
Okay, at least he's not dead. I was more concerned he would be dead.
As far as you can tell, he's just very, very, very drunk. He's not sleeping, that's for sure. I mean, it doesn't look like he's in a natural sleep. He might be drugged, but he's probably drunk.
Mm. Okay. You know, I leave him be, but I, you know, pass on the hint to the guys saying, you know, he could have been drugged with something. I'd be careful just with, I don't know, maybe some of the locals. I don't know if he's on something or if somebody drugged him on purpose.
He's very likely self-medicating, like in this country.
Okay, look. I've heard about these horror stories where, you know, young women go to other countries and they get drugged and they get, you know, assaulted. Just trying to look out for everybody. That's all.
We consider us your protectors. We're going to make sure that nothing happens to you. And for all my pretense and talk, I ain't going to take advantage of you, my dear. Ain't going to happen. I have to work with you for the next 5 weeks.
Well, I suppose...
Next 6 months, I got to work with you, so.
I suppose I'm safer in a group of guys I know than guys I don't.
Well, just don't go wandering off any place.
Mm-hmm.
Besides, you can take care of yourself. You got big muscles on your arms.
Well, true. That's not really going to do anything if I end up overwhelmed or drugged, is it?
That's quite true, but you know what? Let's test that. I want to see how strong you are.
You want to see how strong I am? Okay. Uh-huh. Is this a contested strength roll?
Well then, yes, make your strength rolls.
Oh, I get a fucking... I make it.
But how well did you... I got a 17. Which is just a hard roll.
Hard.
Yeah, 71 out of 85, but you rolled better.
Oh, yeah. So, Pijo will win that.
I guess
there's definitely a point where it could go either way.
Oh, it could have gone the other way because I only got a 60.
But I definitely hold my own.
Yeah. That wasn't so easy.
Well, you know, my dad always told me that that a girl needs to know how to take care of herself.
Do you know how to shoot?
Well, no, but I mean, I'm willing to learn.
Ah, we got 5 weeks of learning for you.
All right. Consider it done.
I wonder if they got one of those things that throws the skeet out into the...
Skeet? Like...
Clay pigeon.
Oh, like a skeet shooter. Yeah, yeah. But then we could practice, I guess, from the bow of the ship or something.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe we can see. I'll go ask the guys on the boat, and if they don't have one, we'll see if we can pick one up. I don't know.
All right, sounds like a plan.
I can absolutely guarantee that they don't have one.
What do they do for 5 weeks?
They work.
They monitor the ship.
All right. Well, let's.
They splice the main brace.
They splice it? I don't think you want to splice
the
anything.
The main brace, and they swab the decks. When no one's looking, they frig in the rigging.
I mean, at least I hope they use protection if they're going to frig in the rigging.
Oh.
In the friggin' rigging. All right. Well, I think I've just about had enough to drink. I need to go back.
Yeah, same. I probably shouldn't drink anymore.
I think that boat's going to be leaving without us if we don't get back there.
Damien, I ask, how much are you okay to drink more? I think I'm a little bit okay.
I'm good for a bit longer. If you are, I can make sure you get back.
Yeah, you know what? I think I can go a few more.
So who's leaving?
Browns.
I'm leaving.
I'm going back.
Okay. I'll head back too.
Okay, well, those of you who are leaving, the three of you that are leaving, as you open the door of the tavern, I'd like you to make a constitution roll, please, as the fresh night air hits your faces.
Oh. I really did not make that one.
Let me try that again.
Oh no. Oh.
I make it.
Okay. Jack, did you make it?
Okay. Excuse me.
Yeah, well, the sea air hits you and up comes the stew.
Oh.
And a lot of the evening's drink with it.
Oh.
That fresh air knocks you for six.
You okay over there?
Yeah.
Your world is spinning.
It's just this horrible fresh air. It's really making...
It's fine to me.
It's all about the pacing.
Oh. Remind me not to mix stew, alcohol, and cigar.
I'll
make sure to remind you. The mention of the word cigars causes you to be violently sick again.
I think I'm okay, though.
Time to go. Let's go.
Yeah, so it might be, from your perspective, Pijo, it might be better if you ask the four of them, the two Sharons and the two Jacks, if they could possibly help you get back to the ship.
Yeah, you know, I go over and I try to... Let's go, big guy.
That's okay. I think I can make it.
You're not entirely sure which way's up at the moment.
Make sure I don't...
Don't puke on me. Let's go.
I think I'm done puking. I don't think there's anything left.
Yeah, you're into the realm of the occasional dry heave at this point.
How about a nice greasy pork sandwich?
Oh!
With some cigarette butts.
No pork carnitas. I don't think pork carnitas are going to be a good idea at this point. I think what he needs is some seltzer water and some crackers.
Jack, you're a bastard.
It was pretty funny, though.
Can I just ask, So, Pijo, what's your character's size again?
Size? Average 50.
Oh, that's all right then. Yeah, okay. Well,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm strong enough to lift that.
But he's really good.
No trouble pulling you along with him.
Let's go.
A bit wobbly, but you make it there. Going up the gangplank.
Oh, crap. I got the shit on my new clothes. Oh, fuck. I'm sorry. My language.
There's a few sailors hanging around at the foot of the gangway, smoking.
And, he drank too much.
Yeah, they
are suitably amused.
I think they got their eyes on me for other reasons. Bennett, see long.
No, that's it. Well, they're all rambling.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. Let's just get back. I just need to.
I kind of help. Pijo prop himself over to the side of the ship and leave him to it.
All right. Yeah, you basically just get into your cabin and that's it. You pass out. The last thing you remember is your cabin spinning at approximately 210 RPM.
Yeah, why is this room? why are we like at sea?
Dizzy.
Feel like someone.
It's
the centrifuge room. They keep it for when people are drunk. Just
I make sure to lock the door of my cabin before I turn in.
What the
very
heck?
Wise, I think. Very wise.
I don't know. Just safety first, you know.
Oh.
I'm the only girl in a band of guys, really, and half of them are drunk right now.
Well, doctor, at this point, Dr. Morton, are you still up and reading?
Yeah, I imagine I'm. Sitting up in my cabin with the oil lamp, just kind of reading. I've been reading all day. I probably took a break.
If you've been reading for that long, then I suppose library use would be the appropriate thing to use. Or anthropology,
My anthropology is a 70, so I'm definitely going to use that as opposed to my 45 in library.
Okay.
I got a 15.
Okay.
yeah. How do you have a 15 in library use?
I have a 45, but I rolled a 15.
Oh, okay.
Either way, you would have made it. It's only a tiny little passage, and it's more of a... just a throwaway remark that's made in a footnote.
Okay.
But you do discover a footnote, which immediately catches your eye because it mentions the Bird's Head Peninsula.
Okay.
And it just makes mention, just in passing, very vaguely, of a tale told by the people. The Hattam people tell a tale of, and it's in the section, you're reading the section about contact and their beliefs regarding white people being the undead and being ghosts. And there's just a footnote where it mentions that the Hattam people have an old legend that they tell of a tribe of white-skinned people who live... to the far west of the peninsula, on the edge of the Tamaral Mountains, who apparently use trained parrots that squawk out a warning whenever they hear approaching people, and they run away and hide. And they're only ever glimpsed in passing in the jungle, because as soon as they know you're there, they're gone. But as I said, it's just a footnote, a note containing no more information than that. It's just a very brief mention. No name of them, no history of what tribal group they're from or anything like that.
Mm.
Just a legend of a tribe of white-skinned people with trained parrots.
Okay, I'm going to make a note of them, of the Hattam people and their belief system. I'm going to kind of dismiss the fact that it's a tribe of white people, because that doesn't make any fucking sense, because it shouldn't. because white settlers have only been there for, what, 4 years?
Yes.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense. So I'm going to chalk it up to they believe their, like, the spirits of their ancestors are, you know, this is a legend, of course, is what it said. So this is, like, their ancestors are up in the mountains, and that's how, that's why they don't see the ghosts of their ancestors, because they run and hide. All right, but I'm going to jot that down in my notes, which I've been making the majority of the afternoon and evening.
Okay, well, let's head back to the Pink Oboe, where Damien and John are firmly in their cups.
We should probably think about heading back. I know it's fun to be here and all, but let's drink up, grab a bottle for the trip, and these people off.
Let's grab more of a bottle. This is water. Good stuff, though.
It's a weird place. This, the later you stay, the busier it seems to get. You managed to push your way to the bar and get a bottle of some indistinct alcoholic beverage that they sell there.
All right.
It's some form of spirit.
All right.
Best you can tell, some brown spirit.
Yeah, this would work. I hand the guy some.
There's a group of fishermen singing what sounds like the song of the Panamanian rover in the corner.
I hand the guy some cash for it, and then...
Yeah, he just takes it and doesn't dispense any change.
And then
doesn't even look at how much you give him. The barman is, at this point, the barman is quite drunk himself.
Ah, that kind of guy.
Yeah. I mean, he's quite an imposing. He doesn't look like the sort of man you would willingly shortchange, because, I mean, he's basically like a...
No.
He's got a lot of scar tissue. He looks like a sort of like relief map of the Himalayas.
Yeah, no way I'm going to try and rip that guy off. So I will head off with Damien, and I leave the bar.
Let's head back.
And okay. As you step outside the bar, I would also like you to make a constitution roll, please.
Well, especially when you look down and you see the puddles of stew.
Yes. Apparently, yeah.
Which looks almost indistinguishable from the way the stew looked when it was in the bowl, to be fair.
I look, someone almost had an accident there, but just give me a second. I think I passed.
I did not.
Yay! Everybody gets to puke.
Even with my substantial size and drinking history, I did not pass.
Well, you unfortunately at this point, you do what John would describe as chunder.
I'm like,
you chunder all over the place.
I kind of whispered to myself, lightweight.
Yeah.
And then
he'll be helping me back.
There's an elderly man sitting by the door, smoking, with a mop next to him, and he just looks at you tutting.
That has to be the worst job.
Oh, there's worse jobs.
Oh,
and you find yourself clinging on to John to get back to the boat. I mean, you're not entirely sure what you've been drinking tonight, but you think the chances are it wasn't made in a licensed distillery. I mean, you've got very bad guts, but you're kind of at the same time thinking that you've still got your eyesight, and that's probably just good luck on your part at this point.
Well, I say let's just get going. I think I know exactly where a boat is.
That way.
Yeah, it's just as though there's only a few boats on this part of the dock, so it's quite easy to find your boat.
Okay. Oh, we go there, and I take you back to your room, and
yep.
I say...
At least, as you go up the gangplank, there's at least two of the sailors are just laughing hysterically as you carry Damien up the...
Big, burly me.
Well, I mean, there's no telling. I mean, these local brews are pretty strong.
Yeah, it's. I mean, given that you can speak Spanish, if you actually look at the label of the bottle they bought, you'll see that it just basically says drink.
There's certainly no one's
going to incriminate themselves by putting a like the name of a manufacturer on it.
That's not what my bottle said. My bottle said "Open Grave."
we could describe it quite accurately as rock gut. I think this stuff.
Grog.
Yes.
All right.
Grog sounds very piratey.
that's what you get. If you go into that tavern, that's what you get. You get meat and drink, and that's it.
Pink Hobo, we have meat and drink.
Yes, and beer.
And beer.
Which is actual beer in actual barrels.
All right, so...
So what's up now?
Next morning, is the boat underway?
Very early next morning. You're actually woken up the next morning by the sound of the
chubby
horns.
What the hell is that? Oh my god. Holy crap.
Awooga, awooga, it goes.
Awooga!
The sound of the chugging of engines.
Sounds like the freaking hellhounds.
You know, I put my pillow over my head and I try to go back to sleep.
The boat is chugging through the Panama Canal.
I forgot to ask, are we like bunking together? I mean, no, obviously
you've all got separate cabins, but your cabins are very, very small.
Not. I mean,
basically just a bed and a locker and a table.
It's like a closet with a bed.
If you want to do any calisthenics, then you'll have to go on the deck for that.
Maybe I do need to get some fresh air.
If anyone's taller than 6 feet, your feet are sort of hanging over the end of the bed. I mean, it's not.
No, I'm tiny. I fit in the bed just fine.
It's better than the crew quarters, but it's not great.
I'm going to go look for coffee. I hope they have coffee on board this ship.
Yeah, there's a galley.
It is Mexico. South America.
There's a galley. There's some breakfast left. I mean, most of the crew had their breakfast a couple of hours ago.
Hola, mi amigos. Café, por favor.
You what, buddy?
Café, por favor.
I don't talk French. You want a coffee?
Coffee, please.
Cup of Joe. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, sir.
There you go, hombre. Goddamn foreigners.
American voice.
You remind me of the Wild West.
Oh, well, do you know?
Ooh, I hate them rabbits.
It's funny you should say that, because actually, I grew up in the South. South of where, you might ask? South of London.
Really?
Eat possums and yam and good old fish and chips. That's right. Mm-hmm. Started turning into Colonel Saunders now. I can't help that.
Oh my god.
Coffee, please.
I'm sorry. All I could hear with that.
There's your coffee, boy. I said, boy, there's your coffee.
Now you're turning into a big chicken.
Yeah, you so.
But yeah. Does it taste like iguana?
Doing the full range of American accents there.
I am sorry, but whatever I drank last night, I'm still hallucinating the hell out of this.
Well,
I think you are, boy. I'm a coffee machine.
Oh my god, there's not even anybody.
I decided to also grab some coffee too, because.
All right, yes. Well, you get in there, you see P. Joe. Standing in the corner, shouting at the coffee pot.
I grab
I'm like,
Joe and say,
I go up to Pedro. I'm like, did you have too much to drink? Because you're yelling at a coffee pot.
Well, he's got coffee, but I'm not quite sure what I'm looking at.
You're looking at a coffee pot.
then why is it talking to me?
Obviously, you are a drunk.
Excuse me?
You're still hungover or you're still drunk.
I'm down here cleaning out the cupboard, you damn fool!
He's definitely not coming. Can you hear that?
And a rather burly-looking and aged sailor appears from under the cupboard and glares at you.
I look for just a moment, absolutely terrified, and I just back away with my coffee in my
hand. I say, Pijo, I think you're drunk, and you're cut off.
No, at this point, the sailor
wanders off into another room, mumbling something that sounds very much like "sucking, frozen, frozen, frozen."
You know, this is around the point when I enter the room, having woken up and engaged in some calisthenics on the bridge, and I come and I'm like, "Why is Pijo yelling at a coffee pot?"
Hey, I don't know either.
It's not a coffee pot. It's Mr. Foghorn Leghorn.
It's a foghorn leghorn.
Just don't talk so fucking loud.
I whisper and I said, I think he's on drugs.
Holy crap, don't you whisper so damn loud.
I'm inclined to believe. So, you know, I go over and I pour myself some coffee and I just have a cup of coffee.
There's a bit of a clattering and the sailor comes out again with what appears to be a large hopper full of scrambled egg.
Oh.
And a pile of toast. And just
hot damn, I'm starved.
Chucks it on the table and says, and points at it accusingly and, and says, breakfast! And then goes back into the back room.
What'd you do to piss him off?
I don't know. Pijo, what did you do?
I believed in him.
that's nice, Pijo. How about we get you some scrambled eggs now?
Yeah, Pijo, I think you need to have something to eat.
Toast. I'll have some toast.
You know, I get a nice big helping of scrambled eggs and toast. Buttered toast.
No, there's no butter.
Aww.
Didn't bring any butter. He just bought dry toast and scrambled eggs.
It's toast.
Where's everybody else?
I think they're sleeping.
Working. The crew's all at work.
Well, the crew's working, but I think he meant the others.
I guess I get some eggs, and then I eat them. This is actually not that bad.
You know, I heard on these ships and a lot of the army, they lace the eggs with saltpeter, so you can't get it up.
Really?
That's what I heard.
She's thick and dirty.
You're
a dirty girl.
You just ruined my appetite. You know that, right?
Well, I mean, it's fitting punishment for you telling me I should eat tarantula.
Well, what do you think the eggs came from? They're iguana eggs.
Sure, right.
Why they're this big.
Yeah, iguana eggs are this big.
Well, they could have.
That's exactly what I was going to say. They could have cracked like a ton of those and just...
Oh, okay. I think I'm coming around.
You're not going to talk to inanimate objects, are you? There, Pijo.
What was up with the coffee pot?
Excuse me, but that was not an inanimate object. That was a man. It might be that I continued the conversation with the man after he had walked into the other room just when you walked in, and you thought I was speaking to the coffee pot.
You were staring at the coffee pot.
You stayed in the bar much longer than I did.
Boys.
Yeah, and I'm not obviously not talking to coffee pots or whatever you want to do, or whatever you talk to.
You got some jam for this.
You know, the biggest question is, why is my voice getting so damn high?
I think something more than your voice has gotten high.
I need some more coffee. Yeah.
Were you doing anything other than drinking there, Pijo, or were you doing some of the wacky tabacky?
Were you having some of the devil's lettuce?
Oh, I don't know what you're talking about.
Obviously, yes, you do, but...
I stick to alcohol, and apparently meat stew and cigars. That's it.
And I mean eggs and toast, but...
Oh, not the eggs. I'll maybe tomorrow I'll eat some eggs.
Well, toast then.
In fact, those eggs... Oh, that smell. Smells like old grandpa's farts.
Why'd you call me? I ain't deaf, boy.
Not what I meant.
Bloody kid.
Where are those other people in our group?
I don't.
This boat go like really slow. This boat is going so slow. I thought it would go faster through these.
You're going through the canal.
Yeah, I thought it would go like. Whoosh.
Beautiful view from the canal out there.
I thought they'd like open the door and we'd all just go whoosh right across the country.
Mean. I'm not sure anything's that instant.
I am a cartographer. I've seen it. Panama's only this far apart from one side to the other.
This far apart?
Yeah.
This, I don't think...
I kind of give my other comrade here a look like, John, I don't think he's the brightest crayon in the box.
I know. Talking to inanimate objects like that.
I'm also not deaf.
It's about 50 miles long, and there's lots of...
Pijo.
Difficult turns.
I'm joking.
Alice, 50 miles
long? 7 days!
I think
if we, if we have to stay in like 3 weeks with you...
48 miles long.
48 miles, okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I thought it was 100.
It's not on the canal, though. Partly in lakes, is it not?
Yeah, it's a series of...
Oh, I mean, it's not... It's not super long.
It doesn't take long to cross it.
Long to go around the entire continent of South America.
That's true.
There's quite a long wait when you're coming out of the Panama Canal. There's a bit of a wait while you're waiting at the locks because they can only get a certain number of ships through at any given point.
Yeah.
So you have to sit around for a while.
In any case, where are the others? They should join us by now.
Good question. Well, we should probably go look into that.
I think the others would have been woken by the same
horrible dragon
by the awoogering of the horn.
Yeah, I'm probably just sitting
on these ships.
I'm probably just sitting on the deck reading. I'm just like right over there. I'm listening, but I'm like, do I really want to get involved? No.
I probably migrated to the deck, and that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're anywhere near the galley, you will hear the sound of what you take to be an irascible old coot emanating from the galley from time to time.
After I'm done with breakfast, I go and I join them on the galley.
Yeah, I join them. I join them too, and I have one of the many cigars that I grabbed. That I bought, and I start smoking them because I'm like, this is going to be a long trip. Might as well.
So, Mr. Morton, Dr. Morton, pardon me. You are an anthropologist, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And I put the book down in my lap.
Well, I've noticed that you spent a great deal of time sitting here reading in your books. And I understand you're a professor and you're probably trying to learn, but I got to tell you that anthropology is the thing going on in that galley over there, out there in that bar. You're not going to find much of it in that book.
Well, I mean, I think that anthropology is more than what you guys do at the bar. I think it's delving into the past of not just the present people that live in a certain culture, but it's also the future and everything like that. So, for instance, let's talk about you. Where are you from? Where are your family from?
Well, most of my family is from Texas. My current family lives in Odessa. But you can probably trace some of my family back to Oklahoma, places like that.
And it's funny that you bring that up, because the majority of the people who went to Oklahoma for the land claim, what anthropologists of maybe 300 or 400 years from now would probably think is that it was possibly one of the greatest essential migrations of in United States history, because of course there was the migration to California, but then there was the huge migration from the East to Oklahoma, which essentially set up the station for the Midwest. I mean, the past is interesting, and it's all in this book. It's not going to be over there at the bar.
You know, I might be interested in borrowing that book when you're finished with it.
Well, this book, and I look, and it's just a grouping of articles about New Guinea, and I'm like, that's fine by me. I don't believe that there's a lot of archaeological discoveries currently documented in New Guinea. I don't believe, Nick.
Well, there's always a possibility that there's something that hasn't been discovered, you know, in the jungles.
Miss Chase,
yeah.
If you don't mind, I am going to go over where Mr. White is, because I didn't understand a damn thing that he said a second ago.
No, go right ahead.
You'll find him far more fascinating than I will.
Yeah.
As with every undiscovered place on Earth, there are plentiful stories about undiscovered civilizations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Has anything been
a lot of them coming out the more florid authors of Australia at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm
suggesting there might have been some sort of ancient culture.
So
in Melanesia or Polynesia.
Is there any documented archaeological finds in
Polynesia?
Well, there are archaeological finds in the sense that archaeologists who've been there have uncovered evidence like, you know, spoil pits and middens and things that indicate that it's one of the oldest settled places on Earth. I mean, it's equally as old as the inhabitation of habitation of Australia. So theoretically going back about 30,000 years.
I haven't
found any like huge temples or anything like that, but certainly in terms of like the archaeology of a tribal hunter-gatherer people, they found copious evidence of, you know, finds going back many thousands of years, spearheads, and
you know, I mean, it would be one of those things where essentially these tribes probably have not changed much for thousands of years.
So it's
almost like going back in time in a way.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a classic saying: "What's not broke, don't fix it."
Mm-hmm. As they so say.
But I'm just there too.
Dr. Morton, can I ask you, based off of your readings and such, a scale from 1 to 10, are we in any danger coming up here on this expedition?
Well,
maybe from poisonous insects and snakes, but...
And that's something that needs to kind of be addressed, and that'll probably be addressed by the guide. But from my time in New Mexico, and then, of course, from my little time in East Asia, I can say that while tribal interference at first contact can be an issue, the majority of what we need to be worrying about is stuff like the heat. And, of course, it's so thick in the tropics of Polynesia that, from what I've read, that it's very easy to get lost. And if you're lost and you don't know how to survive, you could easily die just from the elements alone. So I imagine that it's about an 8 if just normally. If you're alone in the woods, it's a 10. You will die. Hmm. I just say that as matter-of-fact, Lizzie,
as I can. That's a cheerful statistic you're giving us there. Well, what are the chances that we'll encounter something, you know, poisonous or venomous that might sneak into our tents or anything?
I don't know of any. From my readings, I don't think there's. I haven't read anything about a poisonous snake or anything like that. But I'm most certain that there is poisonous insects or poisonous snakes. Which is why I imagine that I will be making a hammock. The higher off the ground we are, the less chance of red ants or something like that.
Yeah. There's poisonous 90, ants.
90% of that whole thing hasn't been cataloged or researched or anything. So, yeah, most likely there's at least. I think I read somewhere that at least 3% of everything on this planet wants to kill you.
Yep.
So you could say 3% of everything in Bird's Head Peninsula wants to kill you.
Yep.
Well, again, cheerful statistic.
But
we're explorers.
Yeah, I mean, it comes with the territory. But it's just you need to be not so much book smart, but you just need to be wary of the surroundings. For a very large majority of my life, knew I wanted to be an explorer, which is why. I can shoot a gun, and I can survive in the woods, and I can survive with very minimal water if I really need to. Because you never know when something can happen, and you're in a life-threatening situation.
Good point. Well, I'm pretty quick on the uptake, so, I mean, I tend to notice things, so I guess if anything goes awry, I should be all right as long as I notice it before it notices me.
Well, the important thing here is to realize that we have a literal map maker within our group. So I think the best bet is to just stay with the guy who makes the map. And I give a smile. And I open back up my book, and I'm going to continue reading.
All right. Good talk.
Well, maps are most definitely useful for finding our way out of there. However, if it takes us 5 or 6 days to get in, it's going to take us 5 or 6 days to get out. And that means if you break your leg, or you don't watch where you're stepping, or you get bit by some poisonous snake.
Yeah.
Well,
if you get bitten,
that's
by a poisonous
what we
snake,
should.
Then, I mean, Dr. Donovan gets to identify it. And name it.
That's what I was thinking.
Take only photos, leave only footprints.
Let's face it, anything that bites you is probably going to end up being called Donovan's Viper.
Holy crap. Did anybody bring a camera?
Yes, I did.
I don't know how to shoot pictures.
Well,
I don't know how to use it, really. But
you don't know how to shoot
one.
Guns? You don't know how to shoot pictures? We're going to teach you how to shoot.
I don't know how to use
a
camera.
I live in the city.
It's a little bit... I'm not really that good on the new technology, but... what we should
I mean, if you've got a camera, if the cameras that you've been given are like box brownies, they're not SLRs or something like that. They're just bog standard commercially available cameras.
Well, I'm going to do a great deal of my time serving.
Use the point and shoot type cameras. You know.
What we should this is what I want to do there, Mick. I want to go and see. What kind of medical supplies are on the ship?
Good plan.
And just so in case something happens, that we have medical supplies. If in case, like you said,
it's a curious seabird flies past the ship, an unusual call.
Jack, what was that seabird there?
That was the yellow-bellied warbler there.
Really?
Sounded like a
the way it like warbles there like that.
Yeah.
Spotted
what
tip.
Shortly afterwards you hear another bird call. From the other side of the ship, you hear something going, frigate! Frigate! Frigate!
Sorry about that.
Identify as a frigate bird.
back to what I was going to say. I would
we'll
think...
cut that one out.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah, I want to make sure there's what kind of medical supplies are on the ship. Just in case.
Well, I mean, there's a medical room.
Well, we should have our own supply of medical equipment to bring along with us.
Yeah, and the medical supplies you've got are in crates that are sealed with
a
red cross on the side of them and medical supplies written on it.
There's a manifest
if you need it.
Yeah, I'm gonna look at the manifest.
That's exactly I wanted to do was see what kind of manifest we got, just in case, you know.
Well, from what Dr. Morton says,
more prepared than that.
From what Dr. Morton says, I think that our main concern would be water.
Yeah, I mean, you've got what do you call it?
It's a jungle. They're not called rainforest for nothing.
You've got Condi's crystals for the
I don't know what that water. Is. Oh, I
see. To fight malaria.
Potassium permanganate, I think.
Yeah.
We can collect rainwater, like you say. Is it a rainforest? Does it rain a lot in New Guinea?
It is very humid, yes.
I would imagine you could probably rig up a linen cloth or something to collect the dew and wring it out.
Well, I mean, you'd have things. Your water filtration that you'd have, in addition to boiling water, you'd also have things like Milbank bags to filter the water.
Oh. Right.
And potassium permanganate to...
Damn mosquitoes!
You can also... I learned this is you can actually filter water via sand or something like that where... All the chemicals.
Yeah, you can use sand and charcoal.
I have heard of that.
If you need to.
Of course, I don't know how much bacteria that's going to take out.
Bacteria are awful small.
Yeah, I imagine it makes it safer, but not perfectly safe.
It. I'm just saying, in case all the other methods fail, that's also a good last resort kind of thing.
I may be worrying about nothing. There might be plenty of water. It is a jungle.
Also, mm-hmm. I don't want to sound like I'm. Also, if something happened, we can also use our own urine if it comes to that.
Let's ask the biologist.
There are streams. And I mean, it would be reasonable to assume that if you're going up into the mountains, you're going to find springs. And also, you've got a guide and a number of native bearers who are very much conversant with the territory. So finding sources of water is not going to be difficult. They probably have methods you don't as yet know.
Mr. White, I ain't going to drink my own pee.
Well, it doesn't have to go to that, but I'm just saying it's a last resort kind of thing.
I'm gonna leave this conversation.
Can I ask, was the book that John brought with him on the voyage by any chance the Rime of the Ancient Mariner?
With the word rhyme spelled wrong?
Hey. What do you have?
You're still going through the Panama Canal, and already you've moved on to the discussion of the urine drinking stage of the voyage.
Yeah, no, I ain't
not even in the Pacific yet.
Let's not. Let's just keep.
At this point of the journey, if you ran out of water, you could just ask to stop the boat at Colon and get some water.
We're just planning.
Hey, we're just planning ahead. You never know what's going to happen. So there's plenty of
filtration and purification equipment.
I think at some point along this trip we should convince John that we've run out of water and he has to drink his own urine.
I mean, could always just you could just take a sack and fill it with gravel and purify that way. But I mean, drinking your pee is a good choice too.
No. I'm not a biologist over here, because it would seem to me that that is poison that your body is getting rid of. So drinking it, you'd just be recycling the poison.
I'm a biologist, okay?
Well, isn't that right? Otherwise, we'd be having urine cocktails all over.
No, basically, there's you all have to do just, there's salt, potassium in it, and you just want to filter that out, and it's perfectly fine.
And how you filter
something
it out?
Something tells me you've done this before.
I had to, yes.
All right, now I'm going to go join Miss Chase on the other side of the boat. All right.
Hey, what? I'm not.
Did you mix it with anything to make it taste better?
I was.
I've got a bottle of this brown stuff here.
Oh, don't drink the brown stuff. Anyway, let's settle down. It's hot.
I'm going to go fishing off the back.
I'm taking my shirt off. Yes, I look awesome for 1920s.
About 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you pass through the locks into Limon Bay, around the coast, past Colon, and start heading down the coast. Late afternoon, you enter Colombian waters. Ship continues chugging along. Very little happens.
Wow.
There's a sound of snoring in the distance.
Yeah. I keep on trying to keep on having cigars and just on the top of the deck smoking cigars.
I maintain light conversation.
I try to practice shooting some seabirds off the back of the deck with the Pijo, because he promised he'd teach me.
Yeah. She just looked at that pelican right there, and you just
don't shoot any albatrosses.
Well, that would be an albatross around our necks.
I don't like that.
I don't think the albatross has come this far south, but they're northern. But I could be wrong.
Albatross.
Anyways, you know an albatross because they're like freaking gigantic seagulls. What are those tentacles sticking up out of the water? No, sorry.
I think that's an octopus.
Hmm. I think they say pulpa in Spanish.
I thought it was pulpo.
All right, whatever. So your Spanish is better than light and mine.
Pulpo. Also, this is... I was thinking that some, like, whenever I have a chance... I would like to just practice doing some throwing knives and comp stuff to pass the time.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to lose them overboard.
No, but you can do that on kind of like darts, but throwing.
Oh, I'm sure the crew's gonna love that.
But you do it on like a board or something like that, and then
right down the hallway.
Yes.
Right outside the boiler room.
Just lodges in a pipe.
We need to take on a few extra crew now.
You got to pass the time, so.
What happened to the cat?
God damn it with the cat!
That cat is really pissed.
Ship's cat runs across the deck, pursued by the ship's Shih Tzu.
When did they make land in China to get a Shih Tzu?
Wait, and then the...
They bought it off the Chinese sailors. And
the big burly chef comes running out of the kitchen. Poopsie, where are you?
Ooh, I'm gonna get that dog.
He's a lap dog. You should see him pull down a reindeer. Beautiful.
So, for the knife throwing practice that he was doing and the shooting practice, is that like an improvement check? What do we do with that?
You can give her 5 weeks of lessons, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean you can have make an education roll.
Okay.
Oh, wouldn't you just do a skill improvement roll?
Yeah.
Well, that's should how be. I would. Yes. All right. Yeah, that'll work as well. Yeah. Do a skill improvement roll. Yeah. So okay. if you fail, then you.
Which I massively failed.
Okay. Yes. Do a 1d10 then.
It's. You want to get higher than your.
Same with that. You want to roll. In your case, you'd roll against your throw skill, and you want to get a fail. You want to be higher than your skill.
Yeah, I'm higher.
So, okay, so again, you get a 1d10.
I literally just rolled 10 that I could add to my firearm. So
yeah,
excellent. Well, I mean, basically, like then. We're going to assume then that you're basically spending like sort of most of every day obsessively
nothing else
practicing
to do.
This because there is nothing else to do. You could go and argue with the cook, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm going to become friends with the cook. I'm going to teach him how to make some real Texas chili.
Yeah.
Ooh, I hate them varmints.
I hate them. Yeah.
All right, so shall we end it there? Did you want to add anything more, Nick, before we finish?
No, I'll just say that the next morning, you're out in the Pacific by the next morning, and the following day you will pass at a distance. You will see the island of Isla Isabela, I think it is, off the coast of Ecuador. Isabella. And you have entered
How long is it going to take us to get to Darwin?
It is going to take you 20 days to get to the first port of call, which would be Samoa.
This is a long journey. This is
the big stretch.
20 days to Samoa.
20 days to Samoa, which you will reach on or around the 31st of July. That's when you are scheduled to put in at Samoa.
Ah, the beautiful
one. There will be a brief stop off at Fiji.
Ooh.
And then from Fiji, it's a big long slog, I think. Let me just check my map. From Fiji, a big long slog. She has disappeared from my map. Well, that was... bit silly of Fiji, wasn't it? Yes, from Fiji, it's a big long slog through Melanesia and up to Darwin. You'll actually be passing by the south coast of New Guinea on your way to Darwin. But this ship is not scheduled to stop there. This ship just goes straight to Darwin, and then you'll be getting your ship with your food and supplies. You'll be leaving Darwin.
Gotcha.
Arafura Sea through the Torres Straits and round the back round the same coast of New Guinea. So you'll get to see that twice.
All right. Our players included Jen Coulter, Corey Heisted, Sean Little, Thomas McKeon, Jeff Wilkins, and myself, with Mick Swan as the keeper of the secrets, please consider visiting our Patreon site. If each of you just contributed $2 or $3 a month, we would be able to cover all of our expenses without any problem. We're currently producing 4 shows a week with music and sound effects added in post-production in order to create a richer listener experience. We provide audio-only versions of our shows free for you to download from Podbean or iTunes. Our musical intro, Birch Run Primal Drive, was composed by our good friend Kevin MacLeod and is used royalty-free under the Creative Commons Attribution License. Feel free to send us comments on the show. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed our broadcast, please give us a thumbs up and subscribe to our channel for updates on our latest shows. You'll find links to everything I mentioned in the description below. This is Tom Rayleigh inviting you to journey with us once again into the darkness for another adventure into the universe of H.P. Lovecraft and the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. Until next time, good luck and good gaming.